Fred Rogan and Rodney Peet, AM 570 LA Sports. It's the BJ's Restaurant and Brewhouse Lunch Hour at 866-987-2570. You give us your best 30-second take, and we, if it is the best, we'll give you a $100 gift card to BJ's Restaurant and Brewhouse. Don't forget the all-new happy hour specials, including $4 BJ's signature handcrafted beer, half-off many deep-dish pizzas. At 12:20, we'll put a grand in your hand. Ned Coletti joins us this first hour. At 12:30, we'll make you the smartest person in the room. Okay, for the Dodgers, there's any place but home. They get home, and look what happens. For most people, there's no place like home. For the Dodgers, there's any place but home. They look great in Washington. They get home, and their bats go cold again.
Yeah, and they go cold with Walker Buehler on the mound when he pitched a great game. You know, you feel bad for the kid because he's had some great outings. It's not getting the run support. But you're right. You know, it used to be magic when the Dodgers came home to Dodger Stadium. This was our place where the magic happened. And now they're much better on the road.
Walker Buehler has been truly a bright spot for the club this year, and he was drilled with a 108-mile line drive. Hit him right in the ribs. It stunned me for a minute. Here's what he said about it last night.
Yeah, it didn't feel good. I mean, it squared me up pretty good, but you know, thankfully nothing's broken, and we'll go from there.
You got hit. Did you get the sense it might be broken? Is 108 miles an hour coming off the bat?
I don't know. I mean, it's been a long time since I played football, but it felt a lot like you know, you dive and get the wind knocked out of you. I've never broken a rib, so I don't really know how that would feel.
That guy's a stud.
Yeah. I mean, you could tell. And he actually made the play at first base, and then you could see him go down to his knees. But, yeah, the first thing I thought, either he broke the rib and then definitely got the wind knocked out of him. I was just – the way it looked, he put his right arm – to kind of protect himself, that I thought it might have hit his arm. And so that was the thing that got me and made me nervous. It's like, God, did it hit his arm? Did it hit his elbow, his wrist, whatever? Because Lord knows we don't need any more of that. But it's funny how you say, thank God it only hit his ribs.
Yeah, it didn't feel good.
And he stayed out there, as a matter of fact, and pitched two more innings.
Yeah.
But I guess the best news, and we talked about it the other day, although that one hurt last night, the National League West is underperforming. They're 26-22 in first place. Those are the Rockies. Diamondbacks, 25-22. So the Dodgers, at this point, are very much alive, despite the fact that they are struggling as well. Cody Bellinger. Let's touch on Cody Bellinger. Playing center field now, we have guessed that eventually the Dodgers will go out and get a power-hitting first baseman. We don't know that to be true. But there's got to be a reason they're playing Cody Bellinger in center field. And he's a critical part of the team, and he will be for many years, but not performing, Rodney, as he did last season.
No, and you know, to a certain extent, it's to be expected that he's not going to have the wild ride that he had last year. Coming out, nobody knew who he was. He burst on the scene. What, he had 39 home runs. I mean, it was a magical season for him. So to expect that to come and happen right away this season, you know, that's a little far-fetched. Now, will he get hot? I think he will. I think he'll figure it out, and which he did last year. There was a moment where the opposing team started to figure him out, and he struggled a little bit, and then he found it again. So I believe he's a good enough player, good enough athlete, good enough hitter that he's going to figure it out. But there is something to the second year, that sophomore slump, as you say. That comes about that guys have an incredible year and then the demands on their time goes, you know, more and above and beyond what you're used to. And so your focus is a little off, but he's just got to get back to doing the things that he does well.
Yeah. Do you think, and that'll be the BJ's Restaurant Brewhouse Lunch Hour question at 866-987-2570. Do you think there is such a thing as the sophomore slump? And if you do you think Cody Bellinger is experiencing that? 866-987-2570, your best 30-second take. Get you a $100 gift card to BJ's Restaurant and Brewhouse. Wherever you are and whatever you do, there is a BJ's Restaurant and Brewhouse near you. Sophomore slump, do you believe in it? If you do, is Cody Bellinger going through it?
Let me ask you this, Fred. If you're Cody, I mean, he's a young kid, right? He's going to say all the right things. But you have an incredible year. You know, you take over for Adrian Gonzalez, become the everyday first baseman, and then after becoming rookie of the year, then you're asked to go play kind of halfway through the season, not even halfway, quarter way through the season, you're asked to go play center field. Is that to allow Max Muncy to get another bat in the lineup? But you're asked to play a different position than what you were playing when you were Rookie of the Year. If you're a young kid like Cody, how do you take that? Do you take that the wrong way, or do you take it as a rub? It's like, what are they doing? You know, I'm wondering what his mindset is.
Well, look, he said he doesn't mind playing the outfield. He likes playing the outfield. He's also been on record as saying he would do anything that the club asked. Now, there were a couple of times this year he made some interesting decisions. Dave Roberts yanked him out of a game in San Francisco. Then we had the bunt on a 3-0 count, just trying to get on, trying to fool him a little bit. So, you know, he's going through a learning curve as well. He might be trying to do too much at times. I don't know if it messes with his head as long as he is in the lineup. I think that's the kind of guy he is. As long as I'm playing somewhere and I'm contributing, I don't know if it matters where he plays. Because in his mind, he's got to be thinking, look, I'm the bat. They need the big bat. And I'm that guy. So I'll be there, whoever they surround me with.
Yeah, I mean, and that could very well be the case. And he seems like that kid because he's an humble kid and really, you know, doesn't show any signs of being anything other than a great teammate and a great team player. But, you know, some guys, you know, they thrive when they're playing a certain position. Certain guys play in the infield and the action is greater, so they're into the game more. Outfield may be a little bit different. And I don't know if that's maybe something that's messing with him. But it's an interesting concept because I think they've got so many quality outfielders and guys that can play multiple positions that something may be happening on the horizon.
All right. Do you believe in the sophomore slump? That's the question. If you do, is Cody Bellinger experiencing that? 866-987-2570. There was a play last night in the game. The call on Grandal. Do you remember the call?
I do. The batter swung. It was a stolen base. And he fell over the plate, and it looked to me like an interference. Now, I don't think they touched, but it was certainly he was in the way and in the throwing lane of Yasmani Grandal.
Dave Roberts came out, and that's what he claimed, interference. The umpire said no, but if you looked at the tape, it pretty much looked like interference.
Yeah. I mean, he was clearly across the plate and interfered with the throwing motion of Yasmani Grandal and should have been called. I don't think you have to, I mean, I don't know, Jason, you know the exact rule. I don't think you don't have to touch the hitter or the batter for it to be interference. The guy's in your way, he steps across the plate. That can be construed as interference, right?
If you interfere with the fielder's ability to make a play, unobstructed play, then it's interference. But it's a complete judgment call. There's no way to review it or anything. And as soon as that umpire says no, it's a no. And that was the run that came across as the winning run.
Correct.
So that was a tough break for the Dodgers. Then again, now they're 2-11 against pitching with an ERA of above 5. Yeah, and it's, I don't know what it is about Dodger Stadium, a place where they should be playing so incredibly well. It was Dodger Dollar Dog Night last night, for God's sakes.
Maybe too many dogs were ate before the game.
Maybe. But they get another crack at it tonight, and of course you will be able to hear the game right here on AM 570 LA Sports. The question, the sophomore slump, is Cody Bellinger going through it? Your best take goes to BJ's Restaurant and Brew House. Let's go. Roy in West L.A., you're on AM 570 L.A. Sports. Go ahead.
I don't think there necessarily is one, but obviously one outstanding year doesn't, you know, prove that you're going to do it again either. And it just proves the point to me. I think the Dodgers should have kept Adrian Gonzalez just in case something like this did happen. You have him to fill in at first. And also, Gonzalez, for what he did for the Dodgers, carrying this team on the back for years, you don't put him on the World Series roster? That's wrong.
He made it. All right.
Did he make it?
Yeah, he did make it. He did.
Are you sure?
Yeah, he got in, didn't he, Kevin?
No, he got it.
Yeah, he did get in.
Just close.
Yeah, no, he got in.
I thought the Adrian Gonzalez rant was going to take him over a little bit.
Yeah, you agreed with that too, didn't you?
No.
Did you agree with that?
No, that they should have kept Adrian? No, they got to move on. Adrian did great things for the Dodgers, but yes, you got an up-and-coming star, became Rookie of the Year. You got to ride with him now. And Adrian was hurt all last year, and hopefully he can squeeze out a few more years with the Mets, but you had to move on.
Wayne in Burbank, you're on AM570 LA Sports. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. Sophomore slump doesn't concern me as much as the history of recent Dodger phenoms. Let's look back. Puig, 3 months, fizzle. Jock Peterson, 3 months, not so great. Bellinger, 4 months, he gave us an extra one. And then he set the all-time World Series record for 18 strikeouts in one series. This started before this season, and I'm really concerned about the future going forward with all these Dodger prospects who start hot and then fizzle.
All right.
Interesting. What do you think about that take, Fred? Do you agree with him?
No, because, you know, what's the definition of fizzling? It takes time. You know, you're in it for the long haul. This is a marathon. So just because somebody comes up and then they have 3 months where they're not performing as you would have hoped doesn't mean they're a complete burnout. Some guys do. Some guys never come around. But I think with Cody Bellinger that might be a bit premature. I think he's going to be just fine.
Yeah, I do too. And, you know, Corey Seager had a pretty good year last year, coming off a Rookie of the Year. So, you know, there's history there. Jock Peterson seems like he's getting his groove back a little bit. And Yasiel Puig, who went through that down year, you know, and struggled, and then found out that if we put him in the eight spot, he's going to be a pretty good hitter again. And certainly his defense has always been there. So you can't go on that record, because Puig has actually bounced back and been a pretty good player, especially last year. And now he's back healthy again. You're seeing that Puig that we like to see. So I'm not buying that at all.
All right, we'll continue to sprinkle your calls in at 866-987-2570. Ned Colletti is going to join us coming up, but we'll still get your calls in for the BJ's Restaurant and Brewhouse Lunch Hour. 12:30. Let's see if you can tell fact from fiction. It's Fred Rogan and Rodney Peete on AM 570 LA Sports. From the heart, my friend.
Don't I know it, Fred. Don't I know it.
All right. This just came into us, and we'll talk about it during the 1 o'clock hour, but the NBA All-Rookie Team has been announced. Two Lakers on the NBA All-Rookie Team. One on the first team and one on the second team. Who's on the first team?
Kuzma.
That's right. Kyle Kuzma is on the first team. Lonzo Ball made the second team. Ponder that as we continue on. We'll talk about it at 1 o'clock. The BJ's Restaurant and Brewhouse Lunch Hour question. Do you believe in the sophomore slump? And if you do, is Cody Bellinger experiencing that? Let's go Michael in L.A. Do it in 30 seconds. Go.
Do I believe in the slump? Absolutely. Do I think Cody has it? Absolutely not. We have no one in the lineup to protect him. Finally, we got JT back, so that's going to help a little bit. He has to stop chasing that pitch low and outside in the dirt, and the one high and inside, and he'll be fine.
All right. Good take.
Let's go half full guy. He's a half full guy, Fred.
So am I.
No, you're not.
Danny in L.A., you're on AM 570 L.A. Sports. Go ahead.
Yeah, the sophomore slump does not exist. It's an old wives' tale that's been around forever. It's just one of those baseball superstitions that has stayed around. T.O. Epstein broke the curse. This is just a mini version of that. Pitchers certainly don't get the excuse of a sophomore slump, but if they don't perform in their second year. So I don't see why hitters should get it.
All right.
That's my take.
Appreciate it. Thanks very much. Somebody's winning $1,000. Hope it's you.
Let me tell you something. Answer the phone. That's the only way you win. Answer the phone. Unknown number, block number, anybody that calls you, answer the phone. You will win a grand in hand.
All right. If you're on hold, stay there. We will sprinkle you in. Now let us bring on a man that will provide all of the answers. The esteemed Ned Colletti, the man who at one time sat in the big chair. Ned, thank you for being here.
Hey, my pleasure, gentlemen.
All right. Walker Buehler last night looked good, and he's quite the man. After getting drilled with a 108-mile-an-hour line shot, he stayed in the game. That's pretty impressive.
You know, I love what this kid brings on a nightly basis, really. Great stuff. Fastball up, fastball down, great slider, breaking ball. Last night, I think he gained, not that he didn't have respect, I think the players respect this guy almost immediately. But taking a line drive off the side like that and catching his breath, having a wind knocked out of him for a minute, and continuing on, that's another sign of who he is. But I think this kid is, when I think about how many innings he's pitched professionally, and this is how good he is, that's one of the fastest rises I can think of. Because he missed a full year with the Tommy John, but really excellent job again last night.
Yeah, no, you know, you say how good he is. He almost reminds me of a young Clayton Kershaw, and that he goes out and does his job, doesn't complain, says all the right things, but yet He loses a lot of close ball games that are one-run games, 2-1, 3-2, where he doesn't get the run support. And we've been saying this about Clayton for years. I hope he doesn't fall into that trap where the Dodgers feel like, oh, we got Walker on the mound. He's going to hold it down for us, and we don't have to get that run support for him.
Well, I don't know if people think that way or not as offensive players. It has been somewhat ironic that he hasn't gotten a lot of run support. But also, Alex Wood can probably make the same claim to some degree. Offense has struggled off and on first 7 weeks of the season. I like how he, when he does get beat by a close margin, he takes it on himself. He says, hey, you know, I can't be giving up that many runs. I can't be doing this. I can't be doing that. So that gains a lot of ground, too, inside that room, because I think that, you know, everybody on the team is trying. They're all trying to do what they're supposed to be doing. Sometimes, as you know, the sports doesn't always allow you to do what you want to do. But I think his composure, his demeanor, his ability, his intellect, I think for his age, you would think this guy had been around a lot longer than he has.
Annette, can you pinpoint why it seems that when the Dodgers get home, they don't play as well? It's like they're better on the road than at home. Why is that?
It's interesting because, boy, the last couple of years, they've been tremendous at home. And, you know, sometimes it's coming back off of a road trip of East Coast to West Coast. Sometimes it's coming back from an emotional series and trying to get going the next day. You know, you sweep Washington, you win a doubleheader Saturday. You don't play that many doubleheaders. Sweeping doubleheaders is so rare. And you do it, you beat two of the better right-handed pitchers in the game while you're doing the weekend sweep. You get home, and you try to turn it on immediately, and sometimes it takes a day or two or more to do it. I do give credit to the other team, too, a little bit. Marquis's a very good young pitcher. He's a year ahead of Walker Buehler, but he's a guy that can pitch, and that's... That was also part of the issue last night, that kid can pitch.
No, he can. Ned, should we be reading anything more into Cody Bellinger playing center field and playing it more? I mean, I know Max Muncy has actually come through and have been a bright surprise and hitting the ball well, especially of late. But are we thinking that maybe there's someone at first base that the Dodgers have their eye on that they may be bringing on sometime this summer?
That could be. I mean, there's always many roads that are divergent and many different thought processes that go into, as we talk about one move, moving Cody Bellinger, let him play some center field. You know, there's a few of them. Muncy, really great approach at the plate. Obviously good power, great arm at third base, but you got Justin Turner now back. They had a choice to send Muncy down. They didn't send Muncy down. They kept him. They've got to get him, especially with the offense kind of up and down a little bit here and there, that they got to get that bat in the lineup. So where else can he play? Where is he best suited to play? And where do you, if you're going to move him into somebody else's position, so to speak, can you strengthen another position or at least be even by moving that player someplace else? And I think that's what this dynamic calls for. You have a chain reaction. Corey Seager goes out, so you need somebody to play shortstop. You've got a drafted shortstop in Chris Taylor, who was your center fielder. You had JT out, so you got Muncy playing some at third. Now JT comes back. You want to keep Muncy in the lineup, so you can see the movement. Now, does that mean that they're searching for a first baseman and they're going to move Cody to the outfield regularly and find a first baseman? They may. But typically, you don't necessarily know today what you're going to decidedly be able to do later. But you do keep that in mind. And the more reps Cody gets out in center field, the better he's going to be out there. I think he can play anywhere. Probably can play third base because he's a left-handed, or shortstop because he's a left-handed, or second base. But the left-handed is the only thing that restricts him from playing probably all nine positions, if you think about it, because the kid's got a great arm. But the ability to play center field is not beyond his scope of talent. And I think the more reps he gets out there, the more options the Dodgers have. They don't necessarily know who they're going to be able to acquire when you get to the second half of the season. But when you do have the versatility of Bellinger, and now he gets more comfortable out there, now suddenly if there's a first baseman that does become available that you like, you got a chance to not disrupt your club.
Ned Coletti with us on AM 570 LA Sports. You mentioned Max Muncy. Do you like him?
I do like him. I like how he plays. I like his approach to it. You know, he's all in all the time. I love the guys that they play as if it's their last day. Like they're waiting for somebody to tap them on the shoulder and say, hey, you got to go back to Oklahoma City, or hey, we're going to send you back to the house, you know. I love guys that play that way. I was with Billy Miller for a long time, won a batting title in the American League for the Red Sox, played here for a minute. I knew him, obviously, my other position with that the hated rival. But he was a guy that played every day like it was his last. And he played 10, 12 years in the big leagues, won a batting title, World Series. I love guys like that. I think you see it in Chris Taylor. I think you see it in Justin Turner. I think you see it in almost everybody on this club. And a guy like Muncy's been around a little bit, and he was looking for an opportunity. And when you come into camp the way he did, you've got a lot of people that you've got to overtake. But little by little, he did. And I think that he's starting to make his mark. You know, he ambushed that first pitch last night. I mean, the kid was pitching great, Marquise, and next thing you know, boom, it's 1-0. Gotten a couple of hits in Washington, same thing. So he's gaining on it. But the guys that play with that type of passion and spirit, I'll take those guys every day.
Ned, I said this the other day. I said, for the Dodgers, given what happened in Washington, the news was good, but then it was great. The good news is they're playing better. The great news is everybody in the division is not. What's going on with the National League West?
You know, I think the only team that can really put distance between themselves and everybody else is the Dodgers. Arizona, I've been saying it all year long. Their bullpen, I don't think is complete. I don't think their bullpen can stand the test of a long season and be ultra competitive and be successful. They've got a really good team. Don't get me wrong. They play hard. They play well. Goldschmidt has really been a struggling offensive player to date. One of the best players in the league. So they do have a good club. Do they have enough pitching? I don't think so. Colorado, another team, up and coming, really good young team. I love Buddy Black and how he manages. He always gets the most. Arenado might be the best player in baseball. They got a good team. Do they have enough pitching? They spent a fortune on the bullpen. On my general manager tombstone sitting in that GM cemetery, there's a long list of relief pitchers' names carved into that thing, you know, and because it's the most unpredictable group you got. And so I don't know that they have enough to get there either. The Dodgers know how to do it. They know how to win. They've been together a while. There's still a little bit of a work in progress, too, in their bullpen, but it's been a little bit better lately. Once they get that figured out, I think they're the one team that could put distance and a decided distance once everything starts to get sorted out. This is like a horse race. The baseball season is like a horse race. Everybody comes out of the gate, and you got a couple stragglers, and you got a couple in the lead, but everybody's kind of bunched in the middle. Then you get to the halfway point, or you get to the home stretch, and you see somebody pull out. Only team I think capable of doing that in the West is the one here.
From your mouth, Ned. Thanks for jumping on today. We really appreciate it.
All right, gentlemen. Have a great week. Talk to you.
You too, Ned. There he goes, Ned Coletti. He thinks the Dodgers can pull away eventually.
Well, given what you said about the division, and nobody's playing really well, the Dodgers find themselves in striking distance even after the awful start that they have. So they got a shot. Absolutely they do.
All right, we'll keep sprinkling these calls in, but now it is time for you to separate fact from fiction. Somebody will be the smartest person in the room.
Is it real?
They're real, and they're spectacular.
Or fake news?
Fake.
Joining us today, or real or fake? A return appearance from South Carolina Gamecock, Calabasas native, a winner in her only time here, Megan McClintock.
Hello.
Megan, welcome back.
Thank you.
Welcome back, Megan. It's on. Never lost.
Win again.
Never lost.
No, you actually lost to her.
Oh, yeah, I did. That's me.
It's once, at least.
Sorry, I got a bad memory.
Here we go. Serena Williams dominated the beer pong table at the royal wedding after the party. Serena Williams, a 23-time Grand Slam major winner in tennis, attended the Frogmore House evening reception that followed Prince Harry and Meghan Markle's marriage ceremony on Saturday. Williams reportedly stole the show when it came to beer pong. Serena played beer pong like it was tennis, a reception attendee reportedly told The Sun. Rodney, real or fake? Beer pong, Serena Williams.
Sounds like a lot of fun, but I'm not buying it at the royal wedding. I'm going to go fake.
Going fake?
Yeah, I'm going fake.
Megan.
Well, I know she was wearing Dolce & Gabbana, and I know no one in their right mind would play beer pong wearing Dolce & Gabbana, so I'm going to say fake.
You're going to say fake? It's real, boy. No!
What? It's real,
boy. It's real. I'm with you with the Dolce & Gabbana.
Did they use, like, plastic cups at the royal wedding?
They used fine china.
My God. I don't believe that story. Who got that? Jason?
Yeah.
Oh.
Is that true?
Google it.
Okay. Veteran and double amputee claims Six Flags kicked him off ride. Six Flags has issued an apology after a retired U.S. Marine and double amputee claims he was refused entry to one of the park's rides. Johnny Joey Jones, who lost both legs to an IED while serving in Afghanistan, says he was kicked off a ride. And the operator said, nah, bro, you got to have two real legs. Megan, is that real or fake?
I'm going to say real. Six Flags. That seems like something they would do.
Wow.
They're...
You have a history with Six Flags?
I know.
It's weird.
Something you want to tell us about, Megan? Man, I'm so hoping this is fake because that's so insensitive. Please tell me that's fake. I got to go fake just because I'm hoping it's fake.
Well, sometimes hope isn't enough. It's real, boy.
It's real. That's horrible. It's
real, horrible. Yeah,
terrible. That's
horrible. It's unbelievable.
Oh, where are we? 2018? That's happening?
Apparently we're not in 2018.
No, I guess not. Man, I'm trying to go with my heart, not thinking with my head.
All right, let's see how you do here. Megan, you've got the lead. And man stabs friend with a trophy after unpaid NBA bet. According to the Akron Beacon Journal, Steve Jacobs of Youngstown, Ohio, was arrested and charged with aggravated assault after he stabbed his friend with a trophy. Tony Williams claims he got into a fight with the assailant after he did not pay up right away on a bet that they made on the Celts-Cavs game. Williams needed surgery to remove the trophy out of his shoulder. Rodney, trophy stabbing. Real or fake?
You know, it does get pretty heated, especially talking about Cleveland and Boston, the rivals, this time of year. I could see that happening, but I'm going to go with this story is fake.
You're going fake. Megan,
going fake.
I'm going to have to agree. It's fake.
You don't think somebody would be stabbed in the shoulder with a trophy?
No. What kind of trophy was it?
Don't know.
Okay.
Maybe a bowling trophy?
That's why it's fake.
Okay.
It's all fake news. It's phony stuff.
Lance Bass claims Shaq was actually very much involved with NSYNC. Shaq was supposedly an important part of the boy band's history, band member Lance Bass told TMZ Sports. A lot of people don't know Shaquille had a big hand in starting our career. We lived in Orlando, and our first place that we recorded was at his house. All of our first demos and first songs were all from Shaq's house. So yeah, he had a hand in creating us. NSYNC, Shaq, Megan, real or fake?
Real.
Well, that was easy. Just decided it was real.
Yeah, definitely something Shaq would do.
Yeah, it sounds like something Shaq would do. Orlando, he was into music at the time. It's right around the same time he was there. I could buy that, but I'm not going to buy that. I'm going fake because I'm trying to play to win.
You're going fake?
Yeah, I'm going fake.
I don't think you're going to win.
It's real, boy. It's real. It's real, boy. It's real.
I knew that was real.
You should have said real. You'd have had a better chance.
I know. I know.
All right, there's two more.
Never lost.
No, you'll live. In trouble now. Dodgers Max Muncy almost wasn't a Dodger after a suspicious mole was found on him during his physical. Max Muncy, who's been a nice surprise for the Dodgers this year, told the LA Times yesterday he's thankful to be in a Dodger uniform and contributing. He also admitted that his arrival was almost rejected by the doctor who gave him the physical. There was a growth on my thigh that was purplish brown. They removed it, and it came back benign. All good. Rodney, Max Muncy mole, real or fake?
Just because you said Max Muncy mole, I'm going to say that's fake.
You're saying it's fake?
Yeah, I'm saying it's fake.
Megan?
It sounds made up. I'm going to have to go with fake.
These things happen.
I don't believe it.
You're going to go fake?
I'm going fake.
It's all fake news.
Good.
It's phony stuff.
Good. Max Muncy mole.
Come on, man. Come on, man. You know what that means, though. You know what that means?
Yeah. Yeah, I took an L today.
Yeah, it means you're going to win, Megan.
Yes.
Last one. This is Rodney for respectability.
Never lost.
Yeah, today. The ticket prices for LeVar Ball's JBA League are very expensive. Tickets for LeVar Ball's JBA League went on sale Monday. Predictably, fans will be expected to pay NBA-caliber prices to watch a far worse product. The JBA, which features LaMelo Ball and no top 100 recruits, as an alternative to the NCAA starting on June 21st. Tickets for that session start at $40 and go for as much as $99 per ticket before fees. Megan, is that real or fake?
I think it's real. Your wife and I were talking about it yesterday.
Oh, see?
Oh, wow. Well, I don't know about that. I had nothing to do with that.
Let me see. Let me look at Megan real quick and see if she's...
But maybe she's, she's making it up.
After all the fallout, I can't imagine, but it's LeVar Ball trying to get money over. Should be real, but I'm going to say fake. It's fake.
You're going fake?
Yeah, I'm going fake.
Well, you had the conversation.
It's real, boy. It's real.
I'm the reigning champ.
It's real.
Man. Never lost.
Megan, I don't know if you can come back and play for a while.
What?
I think we should make it a weekly thing.
Oh, my goodness.
That's twice.
Twice. Twice, Megan.
That's impressive, Megan.
Thank you.
Because I never lose.
Well, yeah.
A couple times.
Yeah, a few times. Yeah. All right, Megan, thank you very much
thank
for coming
you.
In. Let's get back to the BJ's Restaurant Brew Hour. Well, today. Lunch hour question. Sophomore slump, Cody Bellinger. Do you believe in the sophomore slump? Is he experiencing it? Let's get a few on here that have been holding. Solomon, in Lake Balboa, go ahead.
Yeah, guys, you know, the slump, that started with the Houston series and the World Series, man. The pitchers are adjusting. So, you know, it's not his sophomore season. That was the end of his initial season. What you do with Cody, he's your best center fielder. You got to keep him. You can't send him down. He's going to have to work through it. And hopefully by the end of the season, or at least by the All-Star break, he's got his act together.
All right, appreciate it, Solomon. Thanks. Let's go Armando in Granada Hills. Go ahead, Armando.
No slump. No slump whatsoever. You Dodgers fans need to relax. Just go out and enjoy your bobblehead days and let the management handle their things. And for the caller to think Adrian Gonzalez to be there, come on, man. You're playing too much MLB the show manager mode. I'm out.
All right. MLB show the manager mode. Like it. Let's go Buddy in Rancho Cucamonga. You've been holding for a long time. Go ahead.
Yeah, I believe that there might be a little pressure after the year they had last year. But I don't see that he's in a slump right now. He's hitting .244 with 7 home runs, 44 hits on the year. And he's in the top 2 or 3 on the team. I'm out.
All right. 866-987-2570. We'll try to get a few more in. In the next segment, we'll award BJ's Restaurant and Brew House. Plus, the NBA All-Rookie Team is announced. There's a Laker on the first team and a Laker on the second team. And it wasn't supposed to be that way. Fred Rogan and Rodney Pete, AM570 LA Sports. Fred Rogan and Rodney Pete, we're wrapping up the BJ's Restaurant and Brewhouse lunch hour. 866-987-2570, sophomore slump. Does Cody Bellinger have it? Do you believe in it? Final three of the day. Sam in Buena Park, go ahead.
Yeah, Cody Bellinger has a sophomore slump. Obviously, with his numbers, batting under .250, striking out all the time, being moved around in the batting order. Obviously, what has he done for us lately? Not too much. So, yes, Cody Bellinger has been having a sophomore slump. Thank you, guys.
Appreciate it. Thank you for listening. Mitch in L.A., go ahead.
Hey, how's it going, guys? Fred. Rod, Lyra, I love you and your wife and that show, Mike and Molly.
Thank you.
I think Cody is going to be fine. She's batting fourth. I think playing center field keeps you more interested in the games, more athletic. Usually put the lazy boys at first base. And he's young, and he's going to get better. Thanks for taking my call.
All right. Calling from Brooklyn.
Brooklyn. Heard it in the voice.
Yeah, always. Let's wrap it up with Ed in Chino Hills. Go ahead, Ed.
Yeah, Cody has to learn how to become a better hitter. He needs to get in the back of the box so he can see that high fastball better and crowd that plate and take that inside slider away. By doing that, you shift the umpire to the right and the catcher to the right so the umpire doesn't get a good look at the right and you take away that outside fastball. I know I umpired for 25 years, and he needs to study Joey Votto in that first baseman for the Cubs. Those guys are hitters.
Appreciate it. We'll have the winner of BJ's in just a couple of seconds. So,
a lot of info from folks out there, you know, getting a box. A former umpire just called us in, you know, talking about the angles.
Well, he knows
about that.
Well, officiating is always a game of angle, so the umpire would know better than anybody.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're at the right angle. You should always make the right call. That's how officiating works.
You should.
It's always it's a game of angles and positioning. If you're in the right position, and that's why they work so hard in every sport, the NBA is so difficult because the game is so fast. But if you're in the right position, they always maintain that you should make the right call. Now, is this the right call? The NBA All-Rookie team has been announced. Two Lakers. Congratulations to both. Lonzo Ball, second team selection. And Kyle Kuzma was the first team. So the Kuz is a first team All-Rookie selection. Donovan Mitchell, Ben Simmons, Jason Tatum. The Kuz and Lauri Markkanen of Chicago round out the first team. The second team, Dennis Smith Jr. of Dallas, Lonzo Ball, John Collins, Bogdan Bogdanovich, and Josh Jackson of Phoenix. There you go. Those are your All-Rookies. And Magic tweets, is this real? Congratulations to my good friends Lonzo Ball and Kyle Kuzma for making the All-Rookie teams. If Josh Hart wanted more votes, he should have either worn big baller shoes or impersonated my great friend Kobe Bryant.
Is that real?
Is that real?
I don't know if that's real.
I don't either.
Well, I'll verify it. What is it? What's the Twitter handle?
Irvin Magic Johnson at Magic's tweets. I don't think so.
Oh, okay, cool.
Does it have a check mark funny. On it?
Yeah, it is funny. It
offered us some humor at the very least.
Yeah, it is funny. What are your thoughts on that, Rodney?
I think it's well-deserved. I mean, the Kuz had a great year. We talked about it during the season that, you know, he was the steal of the draft, and he was the most exciting, most improved, and most valuable Laker throughout most of the season. So, him and Julius Randle, and the fact that he was a rookie, I think speaks volumes about it. And I think that, you know, As much criticism as Lonzo got throughout the year and before the season started, he actually had a pretty solid year. He missed some games. He only played 50 or played in 52 at 50 starts, but he was solid. He was solid. It wasn't as bad as I think people made it out to be. And should he have been first team? No, but he's well-deserved that he got second team.
And is this just a function again, and we've talked about it for so many months, just the expectations were too great for him? He didn't have a bad year. I mean, if you really look at
it,
second among rookies in assists and steals average, fourth in rebounding, and he played a rookie leading 34.2 minutes a game. So he played more than any rookie.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it is. I mean, we're in L.A. He's a Laker. There's a lot, you know, obviously his dad had a lot to do with all the hype. But yeah, I think going into the season, people expected so much out of him, and that's just not the player who he was. He was not going to give you 20 and 10. You know, that's not who he is, and he's going to be right around where what he did this year as a rookie and maybe improve on that a little bit, but he's going to be hovering around that 10 points a game, that 9 assists, that 8 rebounds. He's going to be that guy. So I think people expected him to be Donovan Mitchell, and he's not quite that dynamic of a player as Donovan Mitchell is, which a lot of people didn't know Donovan Mitchell was going to be Donovan Mitchell this year. But I think he's got tremendous upside, and if he takes the offseason serious, then he can be a player that everybody that is hoping he can be.
You know Magic very well. What do you think they're expecting to see when he walks in this fall for camp?
Well, I think they're expecting his body to change a little bit. I think that you have time to kind of really pump up your body and get a little bit stronger. I think that's number one, what they wanted to see from him. And certainly his repertoire when it comes to his offense, his shooting. You know, I don't know if he's going to change his whole shot, but he's got to develop some things that he can go to, maybe some runners, some, you know, 10, 12 footers that he can hit consistently. He's got to be a threat offensively, which he wasn't. You know, people laid off of him and dared him to shoot, and he didn't take advantage of that. And if you're going to play long enough in this league, you got to be able to score at the point guard position.
Yeah, so congratulations to both of them. And Josh Hart is a guy that I think, if he'd have had more minutes, probably would have received serious consideration as well. That's the guy. That's the wild card. That's the guy the Lakers love. You've heard James Worthy talk about it. Magic loves him. So that's the wild card in all of this. But again, congratulations to both of them, and especially Kyle Kuzma, who did not come in with a great deal of hype, did not come in with a great deal of notoriety, and proved that he belongs in the NBA.
Yeah, congratulations to him. Again, steal of the draft. I think everybody's consensus about that is that he He was a guy that the Lakers stole and found out that he is going to be a great player in this league in a very short period of time.
All right, coming up next hour, Aaron Donald not in camp again. Aaron Donald, no OTAs. And the problem with that is we're in the exact same spot we were last year when the Rams said this was going to be taken care of. Now, given the way Aaron Donald played last year, he doesn't necessarily have to be at anything because he's just that good. But Vinny Bonsignor will join us from Thousand Oaks. We'll get his take on that. After the top of the hour, big fight coming up at Staples Center. Abner Mares will join us. And he's got a score to settle. It's Fred Rogan and Rodney Peete. But first, who won, BJ's?
You know what? I liked Armando in Granada Hills. And Armando, call the call-in line to receive your prize. Call sounded like this.
No slump. No slump whatsoever. You Dodgers fans need to relax. Just go out and enjoy your bobblehead day and let the management handle their things. And for the caller to think Adrian Gonzalez to be there, come on, man. You're playing too much MLB to show manager mode. I'm out.
Way to go. You bought a $100 gift card to BJ's Restaurant and Brewhouse on Tuesdays. $3 Pizookie desserts and half off wine by the glass or bottle. Wherever you are and whatever you do, you know there's a BJ's Restaurant and Brewhouse near you. Abner Mares in studio when we come back. Fred Rogan and Rodney Peete, AM 570 LA Sports. Fred Rogan and Rodney Peete on AM 570 LA Sports. Kevin, what's coming up at 1:30?
Well, guys, who is tonight's Game 4 in the Western Conference Finals' biggest four, I should say, the Golden State Warriors or the Houston Rockets? You may be surprised, but how one of the participants in the series feels the more pressure is on. So we'll talk about that coming up and more in Good Call, Bad Call later this hour.
All right, at 1:20, we'll give you a chance to win $1,000 and try to put a grand in your hand. Yesterday, Rodney, we were sitting here, and we were looking at that car chase, remember?
Yes.
The one in Riverside,
yes.
Kevin, you were watching it as well.
Oh, yeah.
And something happened, and I learned about it this morning in this car chase. It went on forever. Do you realize, and I didn't know this, because I saw a clip of it this morning. I think all the stations had it. Do you know that according to what I've learned, channels 2, let me get it. I don't want to mess up. 2, 5, 7, and 11. Channels 2, 5, 7, and 11. So that means channel 9 and channel 4 are not included in this list. 2, 5, 7, and 11 all followed the wrong car.
No.
They all followed the wrong car. Kevin, you're laughing.
Yeah,
because
I did see that. Petros and Matt came on after we did and kind of followed the tail end of it, and they were following one of those channels that had the wrong pursuit. They're just following a random guy who gets out at a liquor store to go buy like a Snickers or something.
Wait, they followed the wrong car?
Yeah.
Like, you mean the news team followed the wrong car?
Yeah, not Channel 4.
It wasn't Channel 4 and it wasn't Channel 9.
But why were they following? Were there police cars chasing this car?
I have no idea.
So why would they follow a car that's just driving?
Because they probably got up in the air and they were told it's going on in this vicinity. And they were told it was a black car. So the chopper immediately started firing after a black car in the area.
And I think they lost him, especially after he got off of the freeway and got into the residential neighborhoods out in the Riverside area. A lot of trees, a lot of industry out there. So I think they kind of lost him for a second, picked up a car that looked very similar. Because at first I was like, wow, this guy's pretty bold to just pull over into the station and go buy some snacks right quick.
Hey, everybody needs some snacks on a long road trip there, Kev.
He's refueling, I guess.
They followed.
That's embarrassing.
The wrong car.
Oh, man.
God, I haven't heard that.
That's embarrassing.
I've never seen that in all the car chases that have happened out here. Fred, you've been in the news for a long time. Have you ever seen something like that?
No, I've never seen that ever. And I've been doing this a long time, but they followed the wrong car.
Wow.
From the wrong car, we moved to the right man. Abner Mares sits down in the studio. Thanks for hanging out, man. We appreciate it.
No, I appreciate you guys for having me on.
All right. Staples Center, June 9th. He's back at it again against Leo Santa Cruz. The first one was a close decision. It's taken an awful long time for a rematch. Why?
I mean, many things. You know, it's just business. A lot of things happen. Last year itself, we were supposed to fight. It was more personal last year. I think his father got sick, so we had to postpone it. But I mean, we're a couple of weeks away. I'm looking forward to redemption, you know, three years later. And I'm in a great stage in my career, in my life, where I know I can beat this guy. I know I can make things right for myself and just blow up after that.
Yeah, you talk about a new stage in your career. You mentioned after that fight that you were a little bit overconfident.
Way overconfident,
yeah?
Yes.
Talk about that a little bit. Going into it or even afterward or during the fight, you were overconfident.
I mean, I think going into that fight, I was so confident that I just wanted to tear this guy's head off. I mean, even if you go back and look at the first fight, very first round, I wanted to just knock him out. You know, I'm not a big knockout artist, and honestly, I just wanted to eat this guy and just tear him down. But as the rounds got, you know, heavier, strategy started changing, I just fell into his plan, his trap, and it didn't go my way. But regardless of that, it still ended up being a close and good fight. So now, being with a different coach now, Robert Garcia, great corner man, great experience, brings a lot to the table, and definitely is going to be a different game plan.
I think over 2,000 punches were thrown.
Over 2,000, for sure.
In that first fight. Mm-hmm. Abner Morris is with us in the studio. He'll take on Leo Santa Cruz at Staples Center June 9th. Tickets are available at access.com or Staples Center box office. You said you wanted just to tear his head off.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to do the first fight.
But that would mean, aside from winning the fight strategically, it was personal to you.
Exactly. I don't know why I took it so personal the first time. I just don't know why.
You don't like him? You don't like him?
No. He's a nice guy. He's the nicest guy you can meet. And that's what I said at the press conference. I guess I'm the bad guy, you know, coming in, because he's such a nice guy. But no, I don't know why. It just got to my head, and I just wanted to tear him out, you know, just knock him out. And it just, again, it just didn't happen. I lost the game plan, and I fought the wrong game plan. But it's still, like, we threw over 2,000 punches. It was more hard. It was more desire than anything in that fight. But now I just got to be smart and really make it my fight.
Yeah, it was a warrior fest in that first fight. What does it mean fighting in L.A. and fighting at Staples Center for you?
It just means fighting home. It means really fighting home. My family's here, relatives, everyone, you know, my whole, you know, fan base, I guess, is here in L.A.
Where's your family?
We're originally from Guadalajara, Jalisco, but I reside in HB, Huntington Beach. My family in Downey, California. You know, it was just this great fighting here. I mean, that fight in 3 years ago was packed with 15-plus, you know, 1,000 attendance, and it was just a hell of a fight. Great atmosphere. And I think this fight alone is just, it's going to be another one for the books.
Another one for the books. Now, you mentioned about you changed trainers, right? Mm-hmm. And what was the reason for that? Because you haven't lost since you changed trainers and everything's going good.
Yeah.
But what was the reason why you changed? You changed after this fight, or fight, right?
I did change right after that fight 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. And the reason being is just that it got to the point where, and I'm going to say it, you know, it got to the point where I would get to the gym and I'll tell the coach how many rounds we had to do. Imagine, you know, the athlete telling the coach, hey, you know what, today let's do 5. I don't feel like doing 6. You know, that's not the type of mentality. I think, yeah, no doubt it's my fault, but I think it was, again, you know, the coach that I had, you know, no disrespect, he taught me as much as I could. He could, I'm sorry, but he just didn't have that meaner type of, like, you know, to like, you know, you got to do what I tell you to do. So now with Robert, you know, I got that respect. I listened to him. I just like him, having him in my corner, because I feel like he's the voice to hear.
He's going to get the most out of you, huh?
A lot more, and he has.
Let me tell you something. You threw 2,000 punches in that first fight. As Rodney mentioned, you're undefeated since that time. Mm-hmm. Man, you're too pretty to get hit. Is this guy a good-looking guy or what?
I'll take that compliment.
He's a good-looking guy, Fred, but you went a little too far on that, man. I don't know what's going on.
Cross the line, you know what I'm just saying. I mean, I'm looking at you, boy. I'd protect myself at all costs.
It's always a good sign when a boxer looks good.
Yeah, I take that compliment. And you know what? Yeah. It's just I like to be more of a technical fighter. But like you said, it just comes down to, like, sometimes the blood, the warrior in me just comes out, and I just want to bang it out with everybody and just go crazy. And I like to please my fans, and that's why I always turn out to really give a show.
Well, certainly you are an exciting fighter. Like, growing up, who did you look up to? Who were some of your inspirations that, and from a fighter standpoint, you're like, that's my guy. That's who I want to be like. That's who I emulate.
You know what? I know I always say and I'm going to say it again, Julio César Chávez. And the reason I say it is, yes, I grew up watching him, you know, us from, you know, Latinos, Mexicans, you know, that was a man seeing him growing up that I really wanted to be like. But now, as the adult, as a grown man, as a more mature man, I get everything, and I would like to be, and I want to be, and I get everything from my mom. That's who I admire. That's who I look up to, and that's who I want to be like. And in the perspective that my mom's been through it all. My mom, you know, has taken. I have 10 siblings. It's 11 with me, 11 brothers, you know, and sisters. That we've been through so much. And my mom is the real warrior. And so when they tell me, where do you get the warrior? Where do you get that, you know, just everything, the fighting, you know, it's my mom. I'm a fighter because of my mom.
And I heard your mom's got a hell of a right.
Right, left, everything.
All right, well, we appreciate you coming in. Abner Mares, featherweight champ, will fight Leo Santa Cruz, a rematch for the featherweight world championship June 9th at Staples Center. Mm-hmm. Tickets for the fight, which is promoted by Ringstar Sports and TGB Promotions, begin at $50, are on sale now. To purchase tickets, visit Axis.com. First fight in August of 2015. Santa Cruz won by a decision. It was called the fight of the year. Hopefully this will be another fight of the year, and you'll come out on top. Good luck.
It will be. Thank you so much for having me on.
Thanks for joining us, man, and good luck.
Appreciate that.
All right, when we come back, Aaron Donald, not with the Rams. The saga continues. We'll go out to Vinny Bond Sr., Fred Rogan, and Rodney Peete on AM 570 LA Sports. Hey, Daryl, you're on AM 570 LA Sports. How are you today? Oh, sorry. There you go, Daryl. You're on.
Hey, Fred. Fabulous day. Thank you.
All right. You want a pair of Galaxy tickets? Don't miss any of the action on Saturday, June 9th. The Galaxy take on Western Conference foe Real Salt Lake. Catch the game starting at 7:30 at StubHub Center, celebrating its 15th anniversary. Get your tickets today at lagalaxy.com/tickets. You good with that?
Sweet, very sweet. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for listening to the radio station. We appreciate
all
you.
All the time. All the time.
Have a good one. And now let's give somebody $1,000.
And answer the phone. Unknown number, block number. Anybody may call you, so you answer the phone. That's the only way you got a chance to win or us to put a grand in your hand. Answer the phone.
All right. Now, joining us, hands up always, our NFL insider, the man that knows the Rams like the back of his hand, it's Vinny Bond Sr. Vinny, long time. How are you?
I'm doing good, guys. How are you doing?
We're doing good, Vinny. Everything's good here. Well, I don't know if everything's good there, though.
What did Fred mean by hands up in the air, Vinny? I don't know what that meant.
I don't know. I'm anxious to find out what exactly he means by that.
What I meant is your hands are up, you're innocent. That's all. It's not
I
fault.
Am innocent.
You're innocent.
Yes, until proven guilty.
Wow. Okay. Well, who's guilty with the Rams right now? With Aaron Donald.
Well, you know, look, anyone that I talk to, I don't think anyone predicts that this is going to end up in a way that Aaron Donald doesn't want it to end up or the Rams don't want it to end up. I foresee a positive outcome through all of this for both the team and the player. We're not at any kind of a critical stage right now. These are voluntary workouts. There's some issues, obviously, that need to be worked out. There's also a great football player up in Oakland by the name of Khalil Mack, who's in the same exact situation that Aaron Donald is in, was drafted ahead of Aaron Donald in the same draft, and is not quite as good as Aaron Donald, but close, and he needs to get paid, too. And I think that both of those guys are trying to figure out what each guy is going to make before maybe pulling the trigger on themselves, because obviously one wants to make more than the other. So there's that to factor in. I don't sense any angst or contentiousness throughout all of this. I think it's going to end up favorably. It's just a matter of when at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure they're having late night conversations, man. Hey, don't take something too low. Don't set the bar too low.
Yeah, exactly, right?
But you talk about there's no angst or anything like that, but we've been talking about this for a year, Vinny. I mean, this was almost done during the season last year, and yet here we are, you know, almost May, almost, you know, summertime, and we're talking about it again. So there's no tension or anything like that going on?
No, not from what I can gather. And let's keep in mind that he had 2 years left on his contract last year. Now he's got one more year this year. Plus, I mean, if it gets to this, which I don't think it's going to happen, but there's still the franchise tag that the Rams could use. So theoretically, they still have him under control for at least 3 more years. So I don't think they'd want to go down that path. I don't think he wants to go down that path. I think sooner rather than later, both sides are going to figure out what his worth is, where he fits in this big puzzle, because think of it. As the Rams look ahead to the future, I mean, they're not working in a world that doesn't include a hard salary cap. And you start looking ahead to Todd Gurley needs to get done. Marcus Peters needs to get done. Brandon Cooks needs to get done. Jared Goff will eventually need to get done. All of that needs to fit under a hard salary cap. And I think that, you know, if without a salary cap, Stan Kroenke would back up the Brinks truck and pay him whatever he wants. But that's not the world that the Rams or any NFL team operates in. So it's going to have to figure into the big picture.
Yeah, and when you see the new faces around there, Vinny, I get the feeling from the outside looking in, they've got a little attitude about them. They obviously were a great team last year and turned it around, but I think they got tremendously better. Do you feel a sense that they got a little swagger going with the addition of the new players?
No doubt about it. And I was just thinking about that yesterday, about how that locker room has transformed since 2016. And even more so, or not more so, but from last year to this year, there's another jump in that regards. We've got some commanding personalities to deal with here in Los Angeles with the Rams. When you talk about Sue, when you talk about Aqib Talib and Marcus Peters, these are commanding personalities who demand attention on the field and aren't afraid to speak up their mind off of it. We saw Marcus Peters yesterday. He's months into his Rams career telling the Rams, you need to pay my man Aaron Donald. He's not shy about saying that. And then you look at a Brandon Cooks, who's a cerebral, intelligent football player who looks at the game the right way and is able to explain it the right way. And so you have personalities now on this team. And I got to figure that's going to translate to success on the field. These are winners in on top of being really good players.
Is anybody else missing?
No, none of the major players are missing. There's a rookie, one of their mid-round picks, who's a little bit injured right now, but he'll be fine. Aaron Donald obviously isn't there, but everyone else is there and accounted for. And again, these are voluntary workouts. I know all the coaches want everybody present, but you look at Aaron Donald. This is the guy who won NFL Defensive Player of the Year without practicing one time during training camp. So if a guy has proven that none of this means anything to him personally, it's Aaron Donald. He was just fine last year, holding out during OTAs and during training camp.
What has Sue been like?
We haven't talked to him so far in OTAs. We're probably going to talk to him sometime next week. But he's, you know, one thing that surprised me about him when we did talk to him, you see him on the field and he's a fiery player and he's gotten into some trouble, doing some things outside the whistles, during football games, kicking guys and doing some unnecessary stuff. But he's really a smart guy. I think on the field, he turns into another guy, but off the field, he's super intelligent. So I'm anxious to and excited about getting to know him and getting to work with him and on that level. But completely different guy, what you thought you see on the football field compared to what he is in real life. So an interesting contrast there.
And then Brandon Cooks, you mentioned him earlier, but how's the chemistry with him and Jared Goff so far?
Well, they've already, you know, yesterday was the first day where they were able to get out on 11-11, 7-on-7, all that type of stuff. But they had previously been working out during the offseason.
Right.
Jared and all the wide receivers for that matter. And they look pretty good. They connected on a 60-yard touchdown pass last night or yesterday that was well-designed at the line of scrimmage. And Cooks obviously is an explosive athlete, got off the field wide open. Goff dropped a perfect ball into his hand. So if that's a sign of things to come, then that's another layer of the Rams' offense, an already good offense. If you could start putting that into the mix on a more consistent basis, when you look at Jared Goff, he's right along the top 10 deep ball passer in the NFL. All the statistics show that. But he really didn't get a chance to do it as much as they would have liked last year. For whatever reason, him and Sammy Watkins didn't have that kind of chemistry. But being that Cooks is here from day one, even before day one, to be able to develop that chemistry, it already looked good yesterday. I can only imagine what it's going to look like in training camp and into the season. It's a big-time weapon that the Rams got.
Vinny, good job. Thanks for jumping on.
All right, guys, take care.
All right, there he goes, our NFL insider and certainly our Rams insider, Vinny
Hands
Bonsignore.
Up. Hands up, Vinny.
He's innocent. He's innocent. And here's a man that's never committed a crime in his life, Vic.
Yikes. Yeah. Dodger fans, not feeling you. Now, are you like me? Are you like me, still flummoxed by the final out last night in the 2-1 loss to the Rockets?
What are you, Vic? What is that?
I was flummoxed.
Flummoxed.
Puzzled.
Okay. Flummoxed.
Or is it flummoxed? Maybe it's flummoxed.
He did. He did. Shaved it down. Now it's tight because it was getting a little unruly, as my grandmother would say. Yes, you got it.
Yeah! It's time for good call.
Keep up the good work, guys.
Bad call.
I may have to hang up on him.
Hopefully Matt Kemp's not like Samson or something where he loses all of his power now that he cut the hair off.
I hope not.
We need a couple hits with the hair.
Yeah, that would be bad. That'd be bad. Good call or bad call, by the way, to say that all of the pressure in tonight's Game 4 of the Western Conference Finals in the NBA is on the Warriors and not the Rockets. Now, despite being down 2-1 in the series, head coach Mike D'Antoni of the Rockets came out and said, quote, "To me, Golden State has all the pressure in this game. They have to come in there and win tomorrow night." To which Steve Kerr came back and says, "I hope the pressure is all on us. We're much better when the pressure is on anyway." Good call or bad call for Mike D'Antoni to say the pressure is on the Warriors to win tonight and not the Houston Rockets, Fred?
For Mike D'Antoni?
Yeah.
It's a very good call.
Oh.
Because he's not talking to anybody but his own team. By making that statement publicly, he's simply delivering a message to his guys. Be relaxed. Don't be tense. Don't be nervous. Let's go out, play our game, and win it. I think if he walked in and said, "Guys, it's do or die right now. If we don't win tonight, we're in huge trouble," that would be the wrong way to approach it. He wasn't talking to anybody but his own guys.
Rodney?
Yeah, it's a good call. Sometimes you gotta, be that psychologist in the chair, and you gotta motivate your team in certain ways. And so for him to make that statement, Fred's right. He's talking exactly to his team and his team only to go play relax. And they feel like, hey, if we can get one and we go back to Houston tied up 2-2, we're in the driver's seat because they got to win it in Houston. And so he's trying to, send a real message to his team to go out and play relax and just get one, steal one in Golden State.
The biggest Mike D'Antoni fan that I know, Victor Brick.
Most overrated coach in NBA history, Mike D'Antoni. Again, coming off the worst loss in Houston franchise history by 41, what are you going to tell the guys? There's nothing to say. I would say nothing. They lost by 41 points to Golden State. There's nothing to say. This is a legacy game for James Harden. I mean, he's a choke artist in the playoffs. He's got a lot to prove, as does Chris Paul. They have a lot to prove, those two guys. This is a gigantic game for the Beard and CP3.
All right.
Sounds like you harbor a lot of bitterness toward the Rockets, Vic.
No, just D'Antoni.
It's mostly Mike D'Antoni.
It's mostly D'Antoni.
Yeah. All right.
I dig the Beard, Lakewood, Bautista, local kid.
There was some beef with you and him back in the day. James Harden, a little bit there for a second.
Oh, yeah, we got involved in the Laker Tunnel.
I remember that.
Absolutely. I got lost in his beard. He got lost in my beard. Don't ask.
Good call or bad call for colleges to be allowed to block graduate transfers. Now, earlier this month, offensive lineman for Alabama, Brandon Kennedy, attempted to transfer from Alabama in conference to Tennessee or Auburn, of course, natural rivals for Alabama. And as a graduate transfer, he'd be eligible to play this season. And most of the time, they don't block these guys. They've already committed or they've already had their commitments to the university. They can move on and do their own thing. But Nick Saban in Alabama is preventing him from transferring within the conference of the SEC, and now it's going through a bunch of different appeals. He's going in front of an Alabama board later this week to try to solve the issue. Is it a good call or a bad call for colleges to be able to block not just any transfer, but a graduate transfer from going to the university they want to go to, Rodney?
No, it's a bad call. Look, sometimes, things don't work out. You got bad blood. You're trying to further your career. You should not be restricted to go anywhere you want to go. And for colleges to try to block these kids, even if it's a graduate or a non-graduate, is ridiculous. Kids should be able to go where they want to go. Who cares if it's in conference? If you want them that bad, keep them there. Make them happy.
Fred?
Well, I understand why Alabama would do that. It absolutely makes sense. But for the kids, as Rodney said, I think it's a bad call. You don't want me here, then let me go play wherever I'm going to play. You cannot control. This is not indentured servitude.
And speak it, Fred. Speak it.
You're right. Fair is fair. And if a kid says, "I'm going to leave," and they go, "You can go," you should not have the right to sit there and block where they go. You are right. If you don't want somebody to leave, you need to do a better job of holding on to them.
All right. Vic?
egregiously horrible call. Aren't the kids screwed enough? Give them their freedom. You know, Saban is the king of the SEC. He's the king of Alabama. But you know what? Let the kids have their freedom. Give them a break. What, do you want blood from the kids? You're already screwing them, you know, by not paying them. And now you can't even let them go free.
Preach it, Vic.
You know, university? This is insane.
Vic's a little testy today.
I like it. I like that.
Fired up today, Vic. Fired up.
You know me. I get nice and bitter sometimes.
Yes, you do. That passion. I love that.
Sweet bitter.
Come on.
We'll move to the sweet science. We just had Abner Mares in studio a second ago. Good call or bad call for Anthony Joshua to stall talks for a unification fight over location. Now, a unification fight for the undisputed heavyweight boxing champion between Anthony Joshua and Deontay Wilder is on hold currently because Joshua doesn't trust the judging practices here in the United States. He wants the fight to take place overseas in the UK, his native land. Now, Fred, you've talked all the time about boxing being the most corrupt sport, and you covered it for years in the Olympics back in the day. So I guess I'll start with you. Is it a good call or a bad call for Anthony Joshua to stall talks for a fight, citing some shady officiating from U.S. judges in boxing?
All right, well, first, I'd say it's a good call if you don't think you're going to get a fair shot. But then again, he wants the fight moved to where he's from. So then you have to think about that.
Yeah.
I can say this. When we did Olympic boxing, and I hosted the boxing venue for NBC, and it was always on CNBC, just like curling, had a dedicated channel. And I can tell you, when we were in Athens, for example, you could absolutely watch guys walking up to the judges and giving them envelopes of money. We witnessed that. We sat there and saw it happening. And when Bob Papa and Teddy Atlas went on the air and talked about it, people became infuriated. At one point, they removed them during London, I think.
Yeah, Teddy. Yeah, I remember it.
They took Teddy and Bob out of the arena. Even though NBC had paid for this slot, they removed them from the arena, and they were forced to do the play-by-play from an edit room back in the International Broadcast Center.
Wow.
Because the people that were watching were going, wait a minute, we can't have these guys here talking like this. So boxing is dirty. And the other side of it is, it's so subjective in the judging.
Yeah.
You know, you see it one way, I see it one way. It's a hard sport to judge.
Yeah.
So, again, if he wants to go somewhere where he thinks he gets a fair shot, I buy that. But I certainly don't think, I'm going to where I live. I don't think that's fair to the other guy.
Yeah, it's a Wilder. Yeah. How about you there, Rodney?
I mean, it's a good call to block it. If you feel like you're not going to get a fair shake in the United States, that's fine. But you can't go to your own country and expect your opponent is going to get a fair shake. So it's got to be a neutral site. I'm all for blocking it if you feel a certain way, but then it has to go to a neutral site then.
How about you, Vic?
It's a good call. Boxing so sublimely corrupt, struggling to break through, you know, even with professional wrestling. Now on Fox on Tuesdays. Bottom line, he's going to make more money in England. I think this is a smokescreen. All the money's in England. All the money's in his hometown. Why would he do it in the USA? The judging is going to be obviously in his, I don't say in his favor, but he'll get a better shot, you know, at a tight call in his hometown. So why not have it where you can make more money and get more of the judge's love? So it's a good call. And he gives the fight a little buzz where there is none.
I agree with Rodney. Just have him take a yacht out to international waters. Give one guy a mace, one guy brass knuckles. Let him go at it. Who cares?
There you go.
Throw the rules out of the water. Who cares?
On a river barge.
Yeah. Speaking of fights, good call or bad call for 50 Cent to challenge Rampage Jackson to an MMA fight. Now, a couple of weeks ago, 50 Cent started talking recklessly on Instagram, like he always does, by the way. And he says he's superior to Rampage Jackson in every way, and he would destroy him if they ever faced off in the octagon. Now, Rampage Jackson was talking to TMZ the other day, did not take 50 seriously at all, says it's not going to happen. 50's drinking too much of that champagne that he endorses, was his exact quote, saying, like, 50's not going to beat me in a fight. But you never know. Could happen. 50 Cent challenging Rampage Jackson to an MMA fight. Good call or bad call, Rodney?
Bad call. Come on, 50. Come on now. I don't care how much you train, and you're going up against a guy that did it for a living. It's a whole different animal. Look, I've been lucky enough to train with the Gracies and do jiu-jitsu, but when it got real, when I asked those guys to put some real stuff on me, it's a whole different level. It's a whole different level than just training. So 50 Cent, it's like what Mike Tyson used to say. Everybody got a plan until they get hit in the mouth.
Yeah.
And so the real deal is a real deal. I don't think Rampage is taking it serious, but a bad call by 50.
How about you, Fred?
Insane call.
Yeah.
I'm going to go in here and fight somebody that does it for a living. Enough said.
Yeah. Really? I mean, 50 got shot like 15 times, so maybe there's something there.
Well, is Rampage,
his skin is resilient, so yeah. There you go.
Oh, is Rampage allowed to bring a gun? Because yeah. Maybe he's got a shot then. Otherwise,
that's the only shot he's got.
Come on.
How about you, Vic?
50, man. Yeah. 50, man. From my borough of Queens. I love the bold statement. I love the fact he wants to get in the ring with Rampage, but it's much safer dropping some fat beats in the studio, my brother.
I say so.
Speak it, Vic.
Much safer. Drop some fat beats in the studio.
I thought he was supposed to get into it with Floyd Mayweather a couple of years ago, his old boy. But they're kind of like have like an on and off again relationship, those
two.
Yeah,
they're like an old married couple.
Yeah, but 50's not fighting nobody. And that's good call, bad call, gentlemen.
All right, nice call today, Kev.
Good stuff, K-Fig.
All right, so the guys are out at Dodger Stadium, Petros and Money, as the Dodgers and Rockies go at it again tonight. Are they going to join us next? Do we know? We'll see.
We will see.
Always encouraging. But they're out there, and we'll try to get them on. Fred Rogan and Rodney Pete on AM 570 LA Sports.